Hello, friend. We are back to talk about Mr. Robot Season 3. I'm Jason Snell, and I'm joined by two other avid viewers of Mr. Robot. I haven't spoken to them about television shows before, but here we are. Stephen Hackett, hello.
Hello. Hello, Jason. And I'm in your computer.
You're, oh no. Oh no. And he may be coming to us from a secret Dark Army server. It's Federico Vittici.
Hi. Hello. Hi. I'm not.
No.
That's fine. I think I'm on the good side. I'm a good person, so not a Dark Army.
Is there
type
a good
of,
side so, anymore?
Yeah. What is the good? That was going to be one of my wrap up questions, but I thought so. Season 3 of Mr. Robot. If you haven't seen it, don't listen to this podcast. This season ends in a really interesting place where I realized, like, the beginning of this show, you're kind of rooting. I mean, I don't know if you are, but kind of rooting, cheering for Elliot and for F Society maybe, and overthrowing the mean old E Corporation. And they get the Dark Army to help them. And by the end of season 3, it is very clear that it seems to be that we're supposed to be rooting for E Corporation and Elliot against the Dark Army. So there's been this, like, entire reversal where all the good guys are the bad guys and the bad guys are the good guys except for Elliot.
I feel like I'm sympathizing for Price even in a way like because I think, like, if there, like, all these problems that were caused by the 5-9 hack, and in the post credits scene where you see the Darlene walking down the street and she's chatting with a lady she just met, and the lady goes like, but what if all the debt comes back and it's not like an easy fix for all the problems that we used to have? Then after the hack, we didn't have debt anymore, and so I wonder, like, what am I rooting for here? And I kind of understand Price. Like, he's being played and he knows that. And I feel like Price despises White Rose.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have very complicated feelings about Price and, like, E-Corp.
Well,
I don't know.
There are several points, especially this season, where I felt like Price gets discarded by White Rose. Like, White Rose blows him off and basically says, "You're done. This is it. We're done." And she basically discards him. And at the time, I'm thinking to myself, well, that wraps up that part of the story. No more Price, no more E-Corp. We don't have to deal with that anymore. They are just more litter in the trail of the Dark Army on the way to whatever it's trying to do, whatever White Rose is trying to do. But Price just doesn't go away, right? And then all of a sudden, I started to think, wait a second. Like, he's not accepting... Maybe he's deluded, but he's not accepting what White Rose has done in discarding him. And by the end of the season, I start to think, oh, well, I mean, there's that moment where he does the "I am your father" moment with Angela, where it's like, okay, I guess he's sticking around. I guess this is actually, but I had completely discarded him. I just assumed, like, White Rose was done with him and he would be, that would be it. And that's not what happened.
But now he's trying to reach out to his daughter. How can you hate the guy for that?
Yeah, that's the thing. I guess it's like he's a guy with a daughter, and he's trying to get back the lost time. He's trying to be a good father now, even though he's been head of a giant evil corporation for decades. But, like, my question is, I wonder. The big question that this season left me with was, are we sure that the hack, 5-9, did anything? Did it fix anything? It seemed to me like it made everything worse. And it feels like the same thought process that Elliot was going through is like, I just gotta reboot, I just gotta reset and go back to that initial point, because all of these past two seasons, what I've done here with this hack and all these people that are dead, I've basically made things worse, if anything.
Yeah, well, you see Elliot and his crew of people realize that, where they realize that the world is still really messed up, and that this post-debt society that they had envisioned, or that Mr. Robot had envisioned, was not taking place. And what you see at the end of the finale is, you know, you get Elliot and Mr. Robot talking on a subway bench, and he basically says, we're going to fix the hack. We're going to try to fix what we did to the everyday person, because this didn't hurt the rich. This hurt everyday working people.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go after the 1% of the 1%. They have shown themselves now, and now I know who they are, and we can go after them. And so I think we've kind of come all the way full circle, where Elliot's or Mr. Robot's goals are the same as they were in the beginning, but the way they're going about it now is totally different. We're going to try to undo what we did, and we're going to attack them directly. And that is a Jason, like you said at the beginning, that is a shift in this show and in this plot that I did not necessarily see coming. I mean, it was clear from the very early days after the hack that it wasn't working, that it wasn't doing what they had hoped it would do. But now they're going to try something else to get to that state where the rich who oppress the poor are stripped of their power.
Yeah, there's a the first season, there is almost this naivety in F Society that they believe the system that keeps the rich and powerful in place is this. It can be brought down by this one hack that deletes all of this information. And by this point, they've realized that that is not the system that keeps the people in power in place. And so he's like, well, I'll just put that back. Can I put that back now? Because it didn't solve anything. It just actually made the regular people's lives worse because of scarcity and confusion and economic distress, and all the powerful people are still powerful. So it was a failure in that regard. They hit the wrong target.
It almost feels like the message is, we know that it's a necessary evil, but you gotta keep some power in place, some E-Corp type corporation that controls everybody, even if it's bad or evil, but it keeps some kind of balance. And if you delete that, not only you don't change anything, because the 1% of the 1%, the people who actually control everything, they still have power. You just don't see them. But in the process, you've just made everything worse for everybody. So it's kind of a sad message if you think about it. Like, you gotta have some evil somewhere. So why not just keep things the way they used to be?
Well, and I think it's the argument against revolution in general, which is, yeah, this is a difficult system, but any revolution is going to be painful, right? There's very rarely a revolution that happens where everybody is fine, because that's not a revolution. And so we see that they made some change here, and all it did was put hurt on everybody. And one of the recurring things in this season is that as Elliot is walking the streets, you keep getting the loudspeaker notices of, like, it's a curfew. Everybody has to be in after dark. Like, this is the world they live in now. They had these horrible, bombings of all those buildings. The financial system is broken. There's curfew in all the cities. And so, yeah, this is the dichotomy between a stability in a system that you don't actually like versus the horrible things that happen in a completely unstable, chaotic world where everything is falling apart, and neither of those is particularly great. And the idealism of Mr. Robot, right, from the first season of what F Society is trying to do, really, I mean, the sad part of the story here is they were being used by White Rose to forward her agenda, and they ended up being complicit in this change in the world that didn't do what they want. All it did was fix things for White Rose to move her plan ahead.
Right. I think behind it all is White Rose's steady hand. You even see that at the end of season three, where to save his life and his sister's life, Elliot agrees to forward her agenda yet again. Right. And whatever is going on in the Congo with this crazy thing, like, we still don't know what, what was told to various people. Who knows what she told Angela to, like, set Angela off on her spiral. But clearly there's that factor hasn't changed, that Elliot is still at White Rose's whim almost.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting relationship, right? Because I feel like Elliot has things that are, Elliot's a threat to White Rose, but also enough of an asset for White Rose to keep him around instead of her own, like right-hand man and lover, right? And he gets cut loose essentially and kills himself. So obviously Elliot is important. So Elliot has stuff going for him. It's fascinating. Like I read one piece after the season three finale that said it's a standoff that in some ways each of them has some amount of hold over the other one, even though they're kind of in opposition to each other. I think that's really interesting. The fact that now Mr. Robot and Elliot are talking again, which makes Elliot, collective Elliot, much more dangerous than when he most of the season, right, where it's a completely discombobulated, like who's running the show from episode to episode. Is it Mr. Robot? Yeah. Is it Elliot? They don't know what the other one is doing.
Yeah. And
I
think the relationship between Elliot and Mr. Robot is perhaps what's most interesting about this past season. You know, season two takes a lot of people don't like season two, and I think their complaint is there's so much. The show does so much to obscure what's actually happening in season two until the last minute, and then you realize what's actually going on, and the reveal maybe wasn't worth all the build up to it. And I think that includes the relationship between Elliot and Mr. Robot. There's a lot of confusion around what's going on there in season three. That relationship is more complicated. We see parts of season three where, there's the scenes in a couple episodes back where Elliot's walking down a hall and Mr. Robot will take over and try to like physically stop Elliot, and they get into a fight, you know, which is shot really well and it's done really well. And then they end up realizing they can communicate through the computer. And we see those shots where Elliot, you know, recedes in his psychiatrist's office and Mr. Robot comes out. And then at the end, they're talking again. And I feel like this season did a really good job at exploring the complexities of that. You know, they get on the ride they were on.
The Ferris wheel.
And, yes. Like a merry-go-round, but on its side. and, you know, saying, hey, you know, we are who we are because of each other. And I think the season did a really good job at diving into that and finally explaining that in a way that is easier to understand than I think it has been in previous seasons.
Mm. I feel like this relationship between Elliot and Mr. Robot, it sort of goes back to the idea of this season of coming to terms with reality, like accepting, for example, that they need to go back to the time before the hack, or accepting the fact that Elliot can talk to Mr. Robot and in fact maybe needs to cooperate with him, or the fact that even Angela in the final episode, she comes to terms with the fact that her mother is not coming back and she's being fooled. So this idea of characters growing up and understanding their own limitations and their own sort of being able to accept the things that have changed. I felt that, especially the Angela part, like for a few episodes I was going, man, what are they gonna do with this character here? She's just going crazy, and it was really sad, especially, you know, when they showed Angela's apartment with all the cat pictures and the cat posters, like the motivational stuff, and when she was walking down the street with the cart and the fish and the golden fish. I thought that was really sad, and that was really, man, what an ugly ending for this character. But then in the final episode, I thought that was really powerful. Not just the reveal that Price was her father, but also the fact that she really believed White Rose, whatever it is, yeah, her plan to, and we can speculate about that, but the fact that she finally accepted that, you know, she, even indirectly, she killed 4,000 people and she believed some delusion that she was going to be able to revive the dead. I thought it's interesting to see different characters accepting their own limitations and realities in a different way.
Angela's delusion, I have to admit, I had several points. I still don't know if I have completely abandoned this or not, because the plan that White Rose has is a complete mystery, right? Like, there was the Washington Township factory, power plant, whatever, and they want to move it all to the Congo now. And it's all part of this long plan that's been, White Rose has been executing, that goes all the way back to the deaths of Elliot and Angela's parents. And Angela believing that, and White Rose is obsessed with time, and so Angela believing that this is all going to reset time back to when her parents were alive. And it's funny that you mentioned, you know, with the hack, it's like trying to undo the hack and go back to the time before the hack. This is a theme of the show. I have to admit, there are parts of the show that are so strange that part of me is, I'm leaving the door open that White Rose is building a time machine. I know that's probably not true, and yet I get swept up in what Angela is getting swept up in, I think, which is like, I don't know what is real anymore in the show. And I can do that because I'm a person watching a TV show. She's a person living in the show, believing it, which is a bigger problem. But I mean, this show keeps me off kilter enough that I'm not willing to completely give up the idea that White Rose is doing something completely impossible. Even though that's probably, I feel like the show is a little more grounded than that.
Do you guys read the subreddit for Mr. Robot? There's all kinds of theories on Reddit, and the most popular ones are that White Rose is trying to build some kind of quantum computer to reverse time, or she's basically just building some kind of time machine. But the idea is that the fact that the Dark Army operatives and all the agents and all those people, they kill themselves. They are so the theory goes, they so much believe in this idea that they're gonna, the dead people can come back because time is reversed, that killing themselves is just, is useful to the cause, and it's not gonna be a problem because they're gonna be able to come back. So that's the theory that's very popular, you know, like, I kill myself, so I basically I can succeed in this mission, but I'm also coming back later, so I win twice.
And we've seen that level of fanatical belief in Angela for a while there. I'm again, with the tone of this show, I'm more inclined to believe that this is all a tool that White Rose uses to get people to do whatever she wants and isn't real. But I'm going to hold out again. There's a tiny percent chance that there's going to be a twist in this show where it turns out, yeah, that's totally what's going on. There is a whole science fictional element underneath the surface. But I think it's more likely that it is just more manipulation by White Rose to get whatever it is she actually wants. And I don't know what that is. For three seasons in, I don't know what she wants. I think that's kind of great. Mr. Robot being separate from Elliot, you know, talking about them having those conversations. Federico, you mentioned like people realizing that they have connections with other people that maybe they had left. I mean, Elliot needs Mr. Robot and Mr. Robot needs Elliot. That's the other thing. There's that moment where Elliot basically convinces Mr. Robot that they need to save the people in the building, right? And that their plan didn't work, or his plan didn't work, and they need to do something different in that episode 5, which we should probably talk about on its own too. And that's a key moment, right? Because after them being split up and kind of broken up, which is hard when you're two parts of the same personality, Elliot turns out convinces Mr. Robot that he needs to stop doing what he's doing. And I thought that was a big step too. I feel very much like the end game here, I don't know whether it's next season or not, but that the end game here is finding a way, because ultimately Mr. Robot is Elliot, right? Mr. Robot is a personality of Elliot. At some point, you would think that they need to integrate their personalities. They need to work together, and that literally working together eventually means they're the same person again. I don't know when that happens in the show, but I feel like we've kind of like, this was them at their furthest apart, and now they're starting to come back together.
I wonder if this relationship is going to be a problem if the people around Elliot are gonna convince him to see his therapist again and maybe trying to fix his quote-unquote problems, because what other people see as a problem, Elliot now sees maybe as an asset, as something that is useful to him to be able to have this split personality. So I wonder if we're gonna see I don't remember the name of the doctor, Elliot's therapist, but it could be an interesting mechanic of other people saying you need to work on your issues, you need to work on this problem. But Elliot, in fact, sees this as an advantage that he has, because he's able to effectively maybe think about problems and situations with two different perspectives, which I think is really interesting as a mechanic, because it's like what you would normally do with two characters, now you can do with just one. And this has been true since the beginning, but I feel like, especially in the final episodes of this season, they really stressed this idea of Elliot is two people and they can collaborate with each other.
Right. Instead of what was the case before, you could argue the unhealthy part is when they don't know what one another is doing, or in the case of Elliot's personality in the beginning of the show, not aware that there's another personality, right? But now it's more like, yeah, is integration that they become one person, or is integration that they are both there talking to each other in Elliot's head? That's a different kind of integration. And, right, we've seen that their teamwork is pretty great. And, you know, I do wonder sometimes if Elliot, the Elliot that we know, is essentially the conscience of Mr. Robot, and that, you know, that Mr. Robot, Elliot kind of pushed his conscience away in order to do this plan. And now the conscience is reasserting itself and saying, no, you can't behave like this. We need to have a conversation about this and think bigger about it. But that's a really great point. Like, does Elliot want to be integrated fully, or is it better for Elliot to have his conversations with Mr. Robot in his head all the time?
Yeah. You know, and Elliot and Mr. Robot and Angela aren't the only characters that have big changes this season. You know, we get to know Dom a lot better, the FBI agent. Mm-hmm. We get to see her begin to doubt her boss and what he's up to.
Good, because that ends, he's awful. You know,
yeah,
Poor Santiago.
Yeah, Santiago knocks her out in the parking garage, but then gets chopped up by an axe. So I guess he had that coming to him.
By Bobby Cannavale, who is a new character this season, who I really enjoyed because he is this interesting combination of being kind of very sunny and friendly and also a horrible, like, mob murderer guy all at once. It's all mixed in together, and he likes his barbecue at the Red Wheel barbecue.
And we learn that he used to be what Grant is or was, because he's dead.
Right.
He used to be White Rose's right hand man, and which is super interesting. Like, is he retired now? Can you retire from the Dark Army?
Apparently, you can, because he says, "I'm gonna go buy some sandals and go to Hawaii for a while or whatever." At the end of the episode,
he wants to finish his book. So he's also a writer. So he's writing a novel, I guess.
Yep.
But yeah, it's interesting. Like, do you need to remain in some form? Of course, you need to remain in the Dark Army because he's still doing things. But it's almost like he doesn't want to. Like, he sees this as a waste of time. He just wants to go on vacation. Super, super interesting character. I think the performance of Cannavale was amazing. And especially the final episode with the axe scene. Man, that was just...
And the end result of that is that Dom is now, like, basically she's stuck being what her boss was, which is she is the most straight and narrow, follow the rules, do the right thing character in the whole show. And now she has completely been basically subverted by the Dark Army to continue their work inside the FBI, which is it's so tragic, because I love that character. I think she's so great. And now this is it. She's now stuck. It's terrible. But I do like Dom. Yeah, I think she's great. So,
yeah, she's great. But it's sort of after you see what the way that Santiago dies, you begin to wonder, would you do the same? Like, would you be a shield for this kind of army if they were to threaten your family and, you know, and your nephews and your kids and your brothers and sisters? Like. And I feel like most of us would say, yeah, totally. I would probably do horrible things if that guy with an axe in front of me kills somebody and then tells me, oh, by the way, your brother lives here, right? And he has kids, right? And I feel like, I could be the kind of person who follows the rules, and I work for the FBI, and I'm a total pro-government type of individual, and, you know, the rule of law. But then the guy with an axe also makes a solid argument in favor of working for the Dark Army. And what would you do? I think that's an it's tragic, really. It's tragic the way that Dom, that we see as the FBI agent that wants to follow the rules, wants to destroy the Dark Army and capture all our the enemies of the United States, is now forced to be just another operative in the Dark Army scheme.
Yeah, and whether she pushes against that in some way is probably her story for next season. And that's interesting. Like, will she find a way? I would imagine she will try to find some way to fight against it, but she's going to have her family, you know, her nieces and nephews or whatever, under threat by the Dark Army if she doesn't do what they tell her to do, which is, it is tragic. So what about, can we talk about episode 5? Because I just wanted to mention it. It is the most striking episode. That's the one where they, it's all one, I mean, it's not really one continuous unbroken shot, but it is shot in as if it were one continuous unbroken shot. There are a lot of things like Alfred Hitchcock and Rope. There are lots of camera moves through thresholds or behind people's backs that used to cover it, but it is a pretty amazing episode that ran in the U.S. Without any commercials, which is also kind of spectacular. Like, it was an event to do it that way. And it was one of the more, I mean, there are a lot of really great episodes this season, but that is one of the more amazing TV episodes that I've ever seen. And the fact that it like sweeps like up from the plaza in front of the E-Corp building. And of course, this is also the episode where the E-Corp building is basically invaded by protesters. And then Angela is in there trying to get the USB key. And Elliot is in there as well at one point. It's such a great episode. That was for me, that's the high point of the season.
Yeah, it kept you on your toes for 15 minutes. It was really remarkable, and I, of course, I cannot imagine what it's like to watch live in the U.S. because I cannot watch U.S. television in Italy. But I assume it felt, you know, especially with all the commercial breaks that you normally have. I've seen the Super Bowl. A couple of times. You guys have a lot of commercials on TV.
It's true.
I can imagine that kind of episode must have felt really different from usual standards.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very different. Every so often during this season, Steven would, I think, quote tweet himself saying that Mr. Robot was good and say, yep, this is still looking good. And I remember that after this episode, I was like, all right, I get it. That's a good one.
Yeah, it reminded me of an extended version of the in the first season of True Detective. There was that episode with a 10-minute long take.
Right,
I don't remember which. And it kind of reminded me of a longer version of that. And I'm a fan of this kind of style, even if it's not technically like a single long take, but it works. I think it works for, especially with the sort of claustrophobic environment of the E-Corp office, it really contributed to that sort of, and I loved, there was a shot when Angela was in the server room when they showed the building from the side. And I thought that was really clever, or from the top. I don't remember.
Yeah, you could see how like the thin wall between her and the outside. It was good. I mean, there's so many great episodes, you know. And I think the a story we haven't touched on, but I think like the design around Tyrell. You see him in the beginning.
Oh man,
he's up in the cabin, and you see this time lapse of him working and cutting wood and like getting ripped. He went from like an IT guy to being this ripped guy. That time lapse, that period of time, we don't know how long it is, that he is captive there, is another great example, I think, of just the camera work and the vision behind this season. And you see him go from there. He's up, you know, up in the mountains, up in the woods. And then before we know it, he's in the basement underneath the barbecue joint. And seeing his progression where, you know, he thinks he's going to get everything he wants. And then he's told that his family's dead. And then he's running away from the FBI, and then he's caught, and then he's let go. all these twists and turns in his story were like, it was almost exhausting watching it, just seeing how much this guy was going through. But it was difficult at the same time to feel any sympathy for him, because he's such a, you know, is he a good guy or is he not? Is he likable or is he not? It was just a real struggle for me this season.
Yeah, I really didn't see the death of Tyrell's wife,
Joanna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really didn't see that coming. I was really surprised. It was kind of it felt like a different type of show, because it's just her lover. She just killed her. No bigger plan.
Right.
No bigger secret. No Dark Army. No White Rose. Just a tragedy that sadly we hear so often on the news. It was just basically just a guy that was jealous, and that felt like was not part of Mr. Robot, but also in a way felt like the real world around the universe of Mr. Robot. So it kind of made it more credible to me.
Yeah, it was definitely a surprise, though. And I really liked that character, so I felt really bad that we weren't going to see more of her. I get why they maybe did it in terms of Wellick's character, but I thought she was so interesting, such an interesting character to miss her than to have her. Although then again, they did set that up, right? That guy was very upset in season two. So mm-hmm. I didn't feel like it was out of nowhere, but it was still shocking when it happened. It's funny, Steven, you mentioned episode 3, I think it is, which is the Tyrell episode. I was taken aback by this show does, from the very first episode, it does so many things that make me go, oh my God, I cannot believe that they're trying to do that. Like that is such a clever idea. Episode 3 of this season is basically the resolution of the season 1 finale, because we never saw what happened after Tyrell was there with Elliot at the at F Society, and it also is basically another resolution of the season 2 finale, because we see how Tyrell got into that crumbling kind of building where he was working and what led to him shooting Elliot, right? So mm-hmm. and it's not in episode 1. It's like third episode in, the show winds all the way back to the end of the first season and finally takes you through what the heck happened to Tyrell all that time, which also has the advantage of establishing Bobby Cannavale as being in the show earlier than he actually was, which I thought was also pretty clever. But that was a great episode. And I just love that they were so patient to get 3 episodes into season 3 before kind of finally telling us like what happened with Tyrell that night with the gun and Elliot waking up, like Elliot waking up in the SUV in the parking lot, like untouched on since the season 1 finale and finally kind of resolved here. I think that's just, I love that. I love that they would go this far before finally telling us what the heck is going on. I thought that was great.
That was good. That was so, and I think I'm in the minority where I like season 2.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you there. I feel bad when people are like, oh, you should come back and watch season 3. It's better than season 2. I'm like, but I liked season 2.
But it did leave all that stuff just floating out there, right? And so I'm glad they went back and tied some of that off.
Yeah, I think it's funny, speaking of season 2, where we are introduced to the character of Leon, which we mm-hmm. continue to see great acting by...
Joey Badass.
Joey Badass. He's a rapper. He does pretty good songs, actually. Yeah? I checked out a couple of videos on YouTube. And I think it's funny when people go like, I want to have a friend like Leon. No, you don't.
No.
Because it's not your friend. He works for the Dark Army. If White Rose sends him a message and says, you gotta kill Elliot, he's gonna stab you. He's very good with a gun. He's very good with a knife. So you don't want a friend like Leon. Where, even though he is funny, but he's loyal to White Rose, not you. So whenever people go like, season two is terrible, but at least we got to know Leon, and I want to have a friend like Leon in my life. Are you sure about that?
And that leads to that episode that is the darkest, I think, of all the episodes, which is with Frederick and Tanya, right? Which is where Leon finds Mobley and Trenton, and And which was the last scene in season two, right? That, and it turns out that that was actually ahead in season three. There was a time gap there that we didn't see, and that has the, you know, as the Knight Rider theme song, and they're out in the desert, and they try to drive the car away and fail while he's digging graves for the guy that he killed, and you go back and forth and thinking like, are they going to get out of this? Are they not going to get out of this? And the brutal end is that no, they're gonna die in a setup in order to take the heat for F Society off of everybody back in New York and put it on them, and they die, and of course they have that last scene where it's intercut of them being put in this, you know, fake hacker compound that the Dark Army has set up and positioned to have it be like they killed themselves, and the police raid that happens, and you know, it's, you can tell that I'm sitting there thinking, oh, this is so sad, because by the time the police open the door, they're going to be dead bodies in there. And that's what happens. It's so, so sad. But that's also Leon, right? Doing his job. That is, he's fun. He's a fun character. But yeah, he will kill you. Like he killed those. Yeah. It doesn't matter whether it's the white supremacists in the jail in season two or whether it's Mobley and Trenton. He'll kill you if they tell him to kill you.
Yeah. He'll kill you, and he'll talk about Seinfeld. That's what he likes to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And I thought the episode with Trenton and Mobley and the whole setup, that totally worked from a viewer perspective, the parallel events that you see what's happening with the Dark Army, creating this setup, and then you see the police raid afterwards, and sort of you feel like both events are occurring at the same time, but of course one is after the other, and it creates that tension in the viewer and during the episode that I really thought that was really well done. And also really sad, because fake suicide, man, that's just evil. But then again, White Rose and the Dark Army are evil, so...
I mean, the one advantage, and this is a thing that that was set up enough in advance that it felt like... It felt fair to me, which is that what she says is, I figured out how to reverse the hack. We know that from the end of season two, I think. And that she sent that to someone who she trusts to do it if they're not, you know, if something happens to them. And that is the one thing that comes out of this, the terrible darkness of their murders and having it set up to be a suicide and have all of this pinned on them, which is Elliot. First off, Elliot visits their families, which I thought was really a great... a great bunch of scenes, and he goes, he ends up her little brother tags along with him for a while. I thought that was a great episode.
That's great. Yeah.
And such a departure, but he's, you know, he knows they didn't do it and that they were honorable people. And also he gets the email from her and knows that, he can reverse the hack, which is super important for the rest of the season. So despite the Dark Army's best, attempts to wipe them out, something escapes that situation and will hopefully come back to hurt the Dark Army in the end, because Elliot's going to go use what she found to wind back the hack.
Yeah. And the reversal of the hack was, the whole thing with the private keys and the decrypting the key. I thought that was really interesting because they set it up. We were assuming that, what's the guy's name? That had the keylogger installed during the night of the hack.
Yeah. Started with an R. I can't remember now.
Romero?
Yeah, Romero.
So we are led into thinking that Romero has the private key, as the key to decrypting all of the data. But in fact, Romero just had a keylogger installed that was monitoring all the keystrokes from all the computers at the arcade. And the evolution of that, sort of how we basically understand how the hack can be reversed. I was reading a post on Reddit with all There's people who take screenshots of every single line of code that appears in Mr. Robot. And because of course, you know, if you're passionate about this stuff, you're going to do that. And of course, Mr. Robot, the show, they hire consultants, they hire actual programmers to do this stuff, which totally checks out. And there's a breakdown for the, I think it's Python code that Elliot uses to reverse the, to use the private key to decrypt the data and to find the solution to basically reversing the hack, which is a totally fascinating read. I'm probably going to say, I'm going to try and send you the link. The fact that they put together for the show a program and all these different scripts and codes and websites, you can actually try the IP addresses from the couple of shots that you see with Elliot at a computer at a terminal. It's super detailed. It, like, every time I come across this stuff, like most TV shows, they go like, oh yeah, he's a hacker, he's gonna use a bunch of programs, he's gonna type on his computer and magically you're hacked. But no, here we are shown in a quick succession of events that yes, the hacker is reversed. But if you pay attention, all the details check out. You can go to these websites, you can go to these IP addresses, you're going to find login pages for the Dark Army, which of course doesn't exist, but you can do what Elliot is doing and you can make sure that the code checks out, which is so impressive.
From the beginning, this show has been the way I describe it to people is, look, it's a TV show. They want it to be entertaining, but it is as technically plausible as I've ever seen on a TV show that means to entertain. It's not, you know, there are lots of people can complain about some of the details of the technology, but it's sort of rooted in real stuff in a way that almost, I mean, I would say basically every other show I've ever seen with a hacker in it is not.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a Tumblr called Movie Code, and it takes screenshots of computer screens in movies, and it's like, yes, they are hacking the Pentagon by writing CSS, you know, like, or writing, you know, BASIC and trying to bring down a jet fighter, you know, all sorts of
I think Star Trek Discovery has a scene where with some very modern computer code in it that apparently survives into the 23rd century that people freeze framed and said, what, we're still using C++ in the 23rd century? That seems like a bad idea. But, you know, but Mr. Robot, like, and it is described, what I like about it is it's described in a way that is basically accurate or close to accurate, but at a level of detail that I think if you're a lay person viewer, you go with it. But if you know a little bit more, you're like, all right, like when they talk about getting the public key and getting the private key and being able to do the decryption and all that, or him running, you know, he's SSHing in somewhere and then he's got to run a particular thing with root privileges and all of that. Again, like, it's a light touch. You don't have to know all those things to appreciate the show. But if you know enough about computers to get to that level, you're like, all right, like, I respect the effort for this stuff to not just be you know, whatever, NCIS having two hackers typing on the same keyboard so that they can hack faster. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And the fact that it works on multiple levels, like for the layperson, for example, in the finale, yes, the private key was hidden inside of a JPEG. And the, you know, if you don't know how this stuff works, somehow you can hide code into photos. Okay, that's a thing hackers can do. But actually, if you want to understand how it works, it's this technique that actually exists. I think it's called JPEG steganography.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you can hide essentially data inside of an image, inside of a JPEG, using specific colors, I think. It's so fascinating, and it works. It checks out. It's real. I think it's a very flexible system that it's accurate, and not everybody needs to know the details. But if you want to, you can go to the Reddit community. I think it's the best way. You can find all these explanations and all these breakdowns of all these details. It's really well done.
Yeah, the episode. I just want to go back there again because there's something I didn't mention when talking about that episode eight, where he visits Trenton and Mobley's families, and Trenton's brother follows him around. Is Trenton's brother finds him on the beach, and he's gonna and Elliot's gonna kill himself. Elliot has an overdose of medication, of morphine, and he is going to kill himself. And it is just this, he is so despairing at this point. This is the low. I feel like, given how long this series is probably going to run, which is, I think Sam Esmail said, I think it's like 5 or 6 seasons. This seems to be the low point for Elliot, is right at this moment. Everything is bad. He's just going to end it. And that is when Mobley's little brother comes and bugs him, and they end up walking around, and they go to a mosque, and there's the ice cream. Is it an ice cream truck driver who yells at him at one point? And like, it's such a weird episode. But I love it. But the darkness of it, that it's never, you know, it's never stated outright, but it's very clear that this is our main character who has reached such a low point in his life that he's just going to, he's ready to be done. And it's only the chance that this kid comes along, that little brother of his friend who just was brutally murdered in the previous episode, is the only thing that saves Elliot. I think it's just a wonderful, wonderful episode. Just blew me away. Any other highlights from this season that you guys want to talk about? I'm not quite sure where else to turn. This is a very dense show. There's a lot going on here. I had to, that last scene where Darlene is confronted by the guy, the brave traveler. Yeah. And I was like, who is that guy? And then I was like, oh, that's the guy who killed Elliot's girlfriend and then he broke him out of jail. Yeah, right. I had totally forgotten that.
Fernando Vera?
Yeah.
I didn't expect to see him again.
He's back. He's a time traveler. So. Okay.
Yeah. Sure. I do appreciate the jabs at our current political climate throughout the show. Mm. There are a bunch of scenes that take place, assumedly at Mar-a-Lago, Trump's Southern White House.
Because it's taking place in like 2015 or something, but you can definitely get that right. Donald Trump appears repeatedly, and it's like the rise of Trump is happening during the show.
And even no puppet, you're the puppet.
Yeah, I know, right?
That was great.
and making fun of the taste and the owner and stuff. That, you know, it's so not important to the plot of the show, but it just makes me chuckle every time.
Well, it fits with the themes, though, right? I mean, this is basically saying there is this level of people who are running the world, and they're very rich and powerful, and they are going to run everything, and the system is rigged for them. And even when you think you can overthrow the system, guess what? The system behind that is also rigged for them. So having a lot of that kind of like the opulence of Mar-a-Lago, and having references to Trump, and you've got people who are believe that they are the shadowy cabal that is controlling the world, talking about him and putting him in power. Like, it definitely fits with the themes of the show, which is a nice way also, since they're tied to 2015, and Obama appeared in the show the first two seasons, because he's reacting to the hack and reacting to the terrorism and all of that. Like, how do you make it feel current in 2017 when your show is going to keep on being during the Obama administration? And I think the answer is you bring in Trump. Like, he was around, even if he wasn't the president, he was around then, and that allows them to, even though it's still set in the past now from our perspective, the show feels current. So
yeah,
it's
they
clever.
They even have a version of Alex Jones, the guy with the TV show that White Rose says you gotta have this narrative and you gotta convince people that this is what's happening with Iran, I guess.
Right.
I thought that was really clever. Even following American news from Italy, I have an idea of what, you know, type of situation is happening here. So I thought the references were really well done.
So what is you guys watch the show, and Federico, you're in the Reddit too. What is White Rose what is the White Rose endgame? I mean, I thought the Congo alone was this bizarre thing that came in the first, at the very end of the first season, which is like, so China is going to just annex the Congo, and this is part of White Rose's plan. I think one of the beautiful things about this show is three seasons and we actually don't know what White Rose's plan is. But do you have any ideas about what might be going on here?
Yeah, I guess the two theories that I see people talking about are either she's building some kind of quantum technology to reverse time because she's obsessed with time, or some people believe, which I think it kind of makes sense, going back to what Price said, that it's just about spite. It's there's no ulterior motive. It's just about spite and causing damage or revenge or whatever it is that you want to call it. There's no bigger plan, actually. It's just a delusion. It's convincing people to manipulate people to assemble this dark army, but really there's no bigger plan. So on one hand, you have fans speculating that it's all about time, it's all about reversing time, that White Rose believes she can bring back dead people and alter the course of time. And on the other, you got people saying, nah, it's just about spite, she has no plan, she just wants to cause trouble or to have some kind of revenge against someone or some corporation or some government even, but there's no actual plan. So I think it's two complete opposite theories. Honestly, the time traveling part, I really want to believe that Mr. Robot is not going there to show us actual time travel.
I don't trust it not to do that, but I don't feel like that's what show this is.
Yeah.
Steven, what do you think?
It's about the people believing into time travel. No, that's more fascinating.
I love that. I love the idea. I would love to have it be revealed that in fact, all the people in the Dark Army are happy to kill themselves because they know that time is going to get rewound and it's not going to be a problem. Because that makes sense in terms of White Rose's kind of control over people and getting them to believe whatever she wants. But to actually have it be right seems not consistent with the tone of the show.
Yeah, it... I can't help but wonder if, you know, it was sort of a sidebar to this this season, but all the stuff with the, like, the world currency and competing standards there, that somehow whatever White Rose is doing in Congo has to do with wealth and power at that sort of, like, worldwide economic level. You know, is there something there that they are mining or they're producing that puts them on top? I can't help but agree with you, Jason, about the time travel or, like, whatever that sort of line of thinking is. Like, there are signs of that now, I think, and that would certainly perhaps explain Angela's fall.
Well, there is that one crazy shot of, like, some big thing, big machine at Washington Township that it, like, is just like, what is that? There's that one question, but that's it.
But, you know, this show has nothing in this show has played out the way that you think it will when it first arises. So who knows? Like, I'm trying not to think too hard about it and just kind of, see what happens.
I don't know. I mean, I think the beauty of the show, like, and I realize this goes against what some conventional wisdom about how TV shows are supposed to behave. But, like, I love Mr. Robot because it does things that I don't expect and because it doesn't follow rules that other TV shows follow. And so, yeah, I get it if you're really angry the fact that the season one finale was never directly addressed for a year and a half. And I get it if the season two finale is not directly addressed for two episodes into season three. But I kind of love it. I kind of love that it does things like that. I love that I don't know where White Rose is going right now and what she's actually after. That's why I watch the show, is to be surprised by these decisions that I just don't expect to see, and here it is on a TV show right in front of me. If I had to guess, if I had to make a theory about White Rose, it would be I still am not clear on the division between the Dark Army and China, right? I mean, White Rose is Chinese. White Rose is a high up minister in the Chinese government. Mm-hmm. I'm not convinced. I feel fairly strongly that the Dark Army is not the Chinese government and that White Rose is playing a separate game. However, I do wonder sometimes if, especially as the sort of Chinese government aspect fades into the background here, if there's a misdirection going on, and that what White Rose is really trying to do is a bigger scheme that nobody else sees that puts White Rose in charge of maybe the Chinese government or some huge part of it, like that makes White Rose in charge of the most powerful nation on earth because the U.S. has been laid low by all of these machinations involving F Society. Like that might be an interesting way to go, or that's her hope is to be in that end game, as opposed to building a time machine, which would be, those are very different end games for this show. President of China or time machine.
It's really different. I can see that theory playing out quite well, that with this impending problem of the Dark Army, suddenly this minister has a plan. And guess why? Because he's in charge of the Dark Army. So, of course, he knows how to fix the problem. That makes sense. I can see that the political theory playing out that way.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out maybe sometime. Who knows? I was going to say next season, but... Is this show going to tell us things next season? No, of course not, because that's the whole point, is it doesn't tell us things. It frustrates us and dazzles us, and I don't know. That's what I love about it, like I said. But I like the fact that White Rose, the mystery of White Rose, continues to deepen every season. And like when we're introduced to her, she is dressed as a woman and is obsessed with time and talking to Elliot, right? But then we get that little tag at the end of season one where she's dressed as a man. And then season two, there's a lot of her dressed as a man as the minister in China. And season three, we go back and it's more like White Rose is largely dressed as a woman and being the head of the Dark Army again. And it's that part of her personality that we're seeing. In fact, I mean, it doesn't take a literature major to say this. Isn't it interesting that perhaps the two most important figures in this show have two faces, right? Elliot and Mr. Robot, and White Rose in her male minister face and her female Dark Army face. So I don't know. I don't know where it goes. That's the beauty of it. I'm sure, famously, for the people who don't know, Sam Esmail, the creator of the show, says that the show is based on a screenplay he wrote. And he's expanded it into a TV series. But I think about that every now and then, because I start to think, like, are we moving into the third act of Mr. Robot now? Is that what's happening? I kind of feel like it is. Like, you know, the story has a shape and he knows where it's going. And in the next, you know, the next couple of seasons are kind of like that final act of bringing it to a climax. And I don't know. I'm excited about that. I like the idea that a creator of a TV show knows where their story is going, because that doesn't always happen. Yeah. And it feels
so
like
the show has been renewed for a fourth season,
right,
to air next year. But we don't know if there's going to be a fifth season.
Well, given the critical acclaim, I have a hard time believing that USA Network would not let it finish on its own terms. It's possible. My gut feeling is that they will play season four, and at the end of season four they will announce that it will return for a fifth and final season, because I think Sam Esmail has said that it's probably five seasons of story. So
okay,
that would be my guess. Is I can't imagine a show that's been this successful critically will be stopped and not allowed to finish its storyline. I can't envision it. I'm a little surprised that they, in fact, to be honest, that they didn't announce that they were renewing it for 2 years and then that'll be the conclusion of the story, which leads me to believe that they're hedging on like whether they want to keep it going a little bit longer or not. But I don't know the behind the scenes, but it's definitely coming back. And I can't believe that it won't be allowed to finish. Well, it was fun. That was a fun season. Like, whatever you think about season two, like, every episode of this was a little special moment that they all had their own personality and they all, you know, drove the plot forward. And that's why I love watching Mr. Robot.
Agreed.
Yeah. And now we gotta wait another 12 months, 11 months.
The problem with the density of Mr. Robot is that then when the new season starts, I'm like, okay, what is going on in this show again? And maybe I'll just listen to this podcast and it'll remind me of it back then. But I do sometimes wish for having enough spare time to like watch all, you know, 32 episodes before watching season four, but there's no way that's going to happen.
That's a lot of dark TV at once.
Even just a supercut would work as a 1 hour supercut of Mr. Robot. That would be useful.
Yeah, I wonder if they might have done that this year. I think that's the best thing to do is for the network to build a here's what you need to know recap show that's like literally an hour of previously on Mr. Robot. That would be enough for me. I would love that because that I just need to be reminded of where we are and who's doing what. Like, because I feel really bad. This happens in Game of Thrones too. When I do a podcast about those episodes, is sometimes people come back and I'm like, I don't know who that guy is. And then the listeners are really angry because they know who that guy is and they tell me. But sometimes it's like, you know, Vera, the guy who comes back at the end of this, it's like, yeah, I vaguely remember that Elliot busted the guy out of prison, and I remember that he had the girlfriend and she got killed. I remember all that kind of vaguely, but like, there's no way that I was just going to see his face and be like, oh, it's that guy. I just, no idea. So that's the refresher is nice. I'm going to need it again in a year. No doubt.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this was fun. Thank you guys for talking about Mr. Robot. That was this is a nice way to end the season, I think.
Thank you, friend. Yeah. It's been a pleasure.
Hello, friend out there. When that'll be the last thing that is revealed about Mr. Robot is who he's been talking to all this time. It's us. he's got a third personality, the narrator. All right. Well, thanks to Stephen Hackett and Federico Vitici. I am Jason Snell, and thanks to everybody out there, friend, for listening to us talk about season 3 of Mr. Robot. Goodbye.
Arrivederci.
Adios.